Welcome back to The Drive. Dan Allstrand along with you on this, the Thursday evening edition of The Drive. Canada needs to step up and stamp out homegrown radicalism before it becomes a problem, and to do so where it often breeds inside prisons, says a new report released yesterday by the McDonald Laurier Institute, which is a public policy think tank. Author of the report, Alex Wilner, argues prisons are a fertile recruiting ground for radicals and terrorists, and cites evidence in both Canada and abroad. Mr. Wilner is a Montreal native and now a senior researcher with the Center for Security Studies at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Zurich. I think the question we have to start things off with, Alex, first of all, welcome to the program. Second of all, what's a Montrealer doing working at the Center for Security Studies in the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology?
Well, I finished my PhD in Dalhousie, actually, in Halifax, next door to you guys, in 2008, and then was kind of looking around for some new experiences and was hired on here at an international think tank that they have set up at the ETH Zurich. And I'm able to publish and work on any subject that I want, including prison radicalization in Canada.
And that's what we're here to talk about today. You argue that prisons in Canada and abroad are a fertile recruiting ground for terrorists. What led you to make that statement?
Well, I think what's happened is that in the European Union and in the United States, they've been incarcerating what we've dubbed homegrown terrorists, homegrown radicals, for a number of years. Often even decades. But Canada's only just catching up. We have our own homegrown radicals, a lot of them motivated by or inspired by Al-Qaeda or Islamist ideals. And what's happened in Europe is that once you incarcerate these terrorists, some of the more hardcore radicals, continue to facilitate terrorism behind bars, continue to espouse violent ideologies, and try to recruit other members from the general prison population. So while Canada's only just begun incarcerating Islamist terrorists, homegrown terrorists, in its own prisons, I think we have about 14 individuals who have been incriminated, we should start thinking about what that means in the next half a decade. Are we also going to have a problem of prison radicalization in Canada?
And that's my next sort of question, is that Canada only has 14 or so of these domestic terrorists incarcerated. Obviously, a long way down the scale from places like the United States or the UK or France.
Right. I mean, we're talking very few numbers in Canada. And I'm careful in the paper, which is available at the McDonald Laurier Institute in Ottawa, to suggest that this is a forward-thinking, policy-heavy paper, which tries to explain how we might preempt the kind of threats and security challenges that our European allies are facing today. But it's true. In the UK, they literally have hundreds of homegrown radicals in prison, and they're dealing with this on a much larger scale. But that puts Canada in a unique position, I think, to learn from the lessons of our friends and allies in the European Union and the U.S. to start thinking about the kind of policies and the tactics and general strategies we might want to develop in Canada to avert some of the more dangerous developments that they've witnessed.
Alex, I don't want to sound like I'm being the devil's advocate here, but looking at the suggestions or the recommendations that you make, aren't we sort of trampling on murky ground here when it comes to human rights?
I don't think so. I mean, I think counterterrorism is about finding the proper balance. These are debates that we have in the open in Canada, but a proper balance between safeguarding the rights, religious rights, the political rights of every Canadian, whether or not they're in prison, but also dealing effectively with the security challenges that we face. Prisoners in prison, they absolutely have rights, but we also have legitimate security concerns. And I think it's the policy challenges to find the right balance.
One of the suggestions you laid out in your report was to deny extremists access to fellow prisoners by placing them into special facilities. Would that make, for lack of a better term, a terrorist prison?
Well, I don't think we have to go that far. Really, what I did was canvass the policies of a number of other countries, namely the France, Spain, US, UK, and tried to derive from their experiences what we should do. So some of those countries house all of their terrorist convicts in either one facility or one wing of a specific prison. But others, like France, for instance, simply label all their terrorist convicts as high-level convicts and then place them in the general prison system with all the other prisoners. I think Canada probably needs to find the right balance between concentrating its terrorist convicts and mixing them in with the general prison population, and to isolate the certain hardcore radicals that continue to try to facilitate terrorism behind bars. At the same time, if there's a terrorist convict who legitimately turns against terrorism, who renounces violence, they represent our greatest ally in countering radicalization. Because if we mix them with the general prison population, they may be able to manipulate general ideas within that group.
So turn them into a sort of an intelligence source?
Not only an intelligence source, but they might even be able to guide perceptions in prison in terms of the legitimacy of terrorism. So instead of advocating terrorism, they'd be denouncing terrorism. And that's exactly what we need them to do. And I think there's probably evidence of both cases in Canada's terrorist convicts. Ali Deary, I don't know if you've probably heard of him. He was one of the Toronto 18 members, but he was arrested and convicted earlier than the rest for smuggling guns into Canada from the United States. And while in prison, he continued to identify as a member of the group. He continued to facilitate their activities and tried to recruit others within prison. That is the worst case. We don't need individuals like that wreaking havoc within our prison system. But at the same time, I think there's evidence suggesting that other members of the Toronto 18 have renounced terrorism and are trying to improve their lives. Those guys are the ones we want to promote and assist.
Alex, why is it important to screen Muslim clerics who visit convicts in prison?
Well, I think, again, from a number of cases, notably in the United States, there were some rather radical religious service providers, in this case imams and other prison chaplaincy members, who were advocating a particularly radical interpretation of Islam within prison. So what they managed to do was to sideline more mainstream interpretations of Islam and sort of manipulate prisoners' belief systems. So they were acting as a force for radicalization. I think this is a very tricky situation. I mean, we need to figure out how to screen our religious service providers in prison, and we need to realize that imams, prison chaplains, are our best sort of defense. I mean, they're on the front lines. If they can identify radicalization in prison, they may be able to effectively combat it, both ideologically and religiously. So I think getting the right individuals in those positions is critical.
Is that where the extremism unit that you suggest be created within the Correctional Services of Canada comes in?
The extremism unit, I think, it could be a very minimal... It's a small policy recommendation that I think will have a major effect. A number of other countries that I've listed already have established these extremism units within their prison systems, but we can position ours elsewhere if we want, another government agency. But their role would be to continuously update the information that we're getting about our terrorist convicts in Canada and offer advice to policymakers that's updated and effective for countering radicalization in prison. So really what I'm suggesting is we need government officials, and we do have one or two already, but we need more, who effectively look at this issue on a daily basis and update policy decision makers more often.
Why focus on terrorism? Why not focus the same efforts on those convicted of sexual assaults or murder?
Well, I think you're right. I mean, I think any crime, any criminal group deserves our attention, and they do receive it. But I think where Canada lacks now, again, because we've only just started incarcerating terrorists, is in thinking about and dealing with incarcerated Islamist terrorists. And so this paper really focuses on a policy problem that we haven't really come to grips with, but I think is very badly needed.
How urgent is this, Alex? You mentioned we're still very new at incarcerating terrorist suspects. How quick do we have to have this done?
Well, I think, again, we have a handful at this point. There are three other individuals who were arrested, as you know, in Ontario in August, and they're, of course, they're still awaiting trials. But I think general trends, and this is reported on by CSIS and other government agencies, suggest that terrorism is not going away in Canada, that trends show a continued threat environment for the next 10 years, and that many individuals are going to be Canadian citizens. So I think it's time to start thinking about it, and I think we need to make some decisions.
Alex, I appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Dan.
Have a great day.
Ciao.
We need to take a break. You are listening to us on News 91.9 in Moncton, News 88.9 in St. John. We are back in 3 minutes.